We now turn to today's roundtable for further discussion about Chief Justice nominee John Roberts' confirmation hearing. To discuss the issue, Charles Ogletree, Harvard Law professor and director of the Charles Hamilton Houston Institute for Race and Justice, joining us from our New York studios, Pedro Noguera, a professor at New York University Steinhardt School of Education, and Ronald Walters, professor of political science at the University of Maryland. They all join us. And let's get right into what we heard Senator Kennedy say. Ron Walters, let me start with you. The idea that we're going to see these confirmation hearings be contentious is pretty much agreed upon, but are they going to be anything but political theater?
I think you said it right. Political theater is what it is, because I think there is a foregone conclusion now that he will, at the end of the day, be confirmed. That's really sad, because when you look at the fact that he was the intellectual force behind much of the turn, ideological turn, culture, as well as the political turn of this country to the right, here is a man who really ought to be held up to the highest scrutiny, especially now that he's going to be the Chief Justice. So I think that the Democrats and Republicans, of course, have made a pact already that they're not going to stop him, that there is a political consensus about him, and I think that that's sad.
Pedro Noguera, let me ask you, should we not at this point be smart enough as a community, as a people, and I mean the citizens of the United States, to understand how the game is played? And if you win the White House, your political ideology, like it or not, usually is influenced and moved to the Supreme Court.
Well, that is how the game is played, except that the game is also supposed to include democracy, which means there's supposed to be some transparency in how we make decisions, and the public is supposed to be informed about the background of a justice who would be appointed for life. I think that the Democrats will succeed if they can very clearly point out the ways in which Judge Roberts' record has aligned him with a set of decisions that are clearly not in the in keeping with where we stand now as a democracy. For example, Alan Dershowitz just wrote a very effective piece. It's too bad it was an obituary for Rehnquist, in which he pointed out that Rehnquist opposed the Brown decision, played a personal role in trying to prevent black voters from voting in Phoenix. If you can expose that kind of record with Judge Roberts, not to say that he's engaged in the same kind of behavior, but the real question is, to what degree can the investigations that have done his background highlight his actual record and then use that to generate public opinion that would turn it against him? If they can't do that, then he's going to be appointed without a problem.
Charles Ogletree, this nominee suggested yesterday he's not an ideologue, that he will follow the rule of law, and that's what this seat is about. Is that believable to assume, no matter what your political bent, you can do that?
If you look at history, Ed, it's not believable, because the same statements were made by people like Justice Clarence Thomas and Justice Antonin Scalia, and we see a clear ideological focus in their decisions. With Judge Roberts, who I suspect will be confirmed, the real issue is whether people will look at it the way Senator Kennedy looks at it. And I think the Senate, each senator has to ask himself or herself, do I have a reason to vote for him? Not against him, but a reason to vote for him. And everything about his record for the last 25 years for progressive and even moderates will say that this guy has been consistent, unequivocally conservative. And if I look at the women's right to choose in terms of abortion, if you look at affirmative action, if I look at the separation of church and state, if I look at the issue of the difference between the powers of the states and the federal government, he is not someone that I can see any fair-minded Democrat saying, he has my vote because I believe he will support issues important to me. So I see fair ground for people to oppose him. The question is whether they have the political courage to do it when the vote comes in 2 weeks.
Ron Walters, when you look at this man's resume, just the resume, it's hard to suggest that he's not qualified. Should Democrats indeed, as you've suggested, make the deal, confirm this gentleman, but then focus their attention to the next seat that the Bush administration will appoint?
No, I think that that was the strategy of the civil rights community in the beginning, to sort of let him go, because at that time he was going on the court as a replacement, and then focus on the second one. But I think that now that he's going to be the Chief Justice, I think that this is an opportunity, especially as Senator Kennedy said, the background of Katrina, to really raise these questions forcefully. Now that the hurricane has forcefully raised them for the American people. I think that the NBA has jumped the gun and said he is, quote, qualified, unquote. I think what they really mean is that when you look at sort of the baseline academic and educational qualifications and his fit to the bar, that he is qualified in terms of his career experience. Qualification ought to mean something else, and I think Pedro Noguera was getting there with respect to looking at this country, looking at the needs of the people of this country, and matching somebody who's going to be on the bench, probably 30 years now, to the future direction of this country. This country is growing more multicultural. This country right now is in a situation where the class divide is growing worse, where you need someone who is sensitive to that group that's left behind. And so that when you look at his record in terms of voting rights and housing and immigrant children and housing legislation in the past and all series of things, he simply doesn't stack up. And so as far as I'm concerned, his pledge that he's got an open mind, quote unquote, really against the backdrop of a consistent ideological direction is really not believable.
Hmm. Charles Ogletree, let me ask you this. How realistic is it to assume that we should look for someone who is listening to the country if, in fact, we utilize Katrina as a microcosm? We can now see that the real problem, issue, concern should have been and prior to the winds hitting and the water hitting New Orleans, and that is that we all have allowed politicians, the media, this country, many, many people to live in abject poverty.
Well, Ed, you're right, and the response was not only slow but completely unacceptable, and it worries me that what we see coming out of New Orleans in particular, and that has some important significance for us today, is that we're seeing what I call racial fatigue, that folks are tired of talking about race, tired of being concerned about race. They think we've solved that problem, and they ignore it. Too many people look at the bottom of the well, and what they see is them. Not me, not us, not we. They see them. And to the extent that this is viewed in the prism of those poor and black people as opposed to those of my brothers and sisters, what I saw, what I felt as an African-American man, that's my family. And until America can see that as happens with one, happens with all, we're not going to get over this. I felt the same way on September 11, 2001. The tragedy of losing innocent citizens to terrorism was painful to me. And it wasn't them, it was me. And I think until we can see it as being a part of us, we're going to have some very serious problems as a country in moving forward.
Pedro Noguera, I just wrote an op-ed piece that talked about the idea that one can only hope that this country will utilize this as an opportunity to really talk unfettered, uncensored about race, race relations, class issues. We had the opportunity to do that, I think, last during the O.J. Simpson saga, as I call it, and we let that conversation go away. Is it important to keep it in the fore?
It is important, but I really think we've got to highlight the class dimension of this because people are confused about race, and I think for good reason. They look and see individuals from African-American backgrounds who are prominent and successful in American society, Condoleezza Rice, we know the pantheon, and that sends a message that race is not an obstacle anymore, that there are black people succeeding, and therefore leads many to conclude that there must be something wrong with those who are not. The kinds of questions we should be asking about New Orleans is why is it that one of the major ports in the United States, which generates billions of dollars each year, was not able to generate any money for the people who live there? Why were jobs in that port not going to people who live in New Orleans? These kind of fundamental questions about access to opportunity in America have to be brought to the fore. And my concern is that when we treat this only as a race problem, we not only trigger the kind of sense that we've overdone this issue, people are tired of hearing it, but there's so much confusion about why it is that some succeed and some don't, that I think that it leaves people at a loss to explain what's going on. We've got to heighten the question about poverty in America.
Yet, Ron Walters, it's hard to divorce poverty and race in this country, since disproportionately so many African Americans hover around the poverty line.
Yes, that's certainly true. We're talking about a quarter of our community or more. And particularly in terms of what happened in New Orleans, you're also talking about probably over 100,000 people who were able to trapped in that situation, able to move, were poor. When you look at the perception of whether or not race was involved, in a recent poll. just out today, 63% of blacks said yes, poverty is involved in it. And I think that regardless of what people think, I mean, they have to take the perceptions of the damaged community into consideration. They also believe, there was a Pew poll last week just released that said that they thought that race was an issue, that the government response, if the victims had been white, 66% of blacks said that it would have been faster. So now these are perceptions of that damaged community and also of blacks nationally. Mm-hmm. And so this is a racial discussion that we're having here. On the one hand, I think we've got to see that there is an opportunity here because a lot of whites open their homes to blacks. A lot of whites are first responders, and they're dealing with the situation in a humane way. So that there's an opportunity, I think, for some understanding and some solidarity. But on the other hand, on the policy side of it, we've got a tremendous question here with respect to the failure of poverty policy over the last two decades. And now is the time to begin that discussion.
Now, in fact, is the time, and I hope, as I said earlier, that we as a country don't fumble the ball this time and we move forward and talk about it. Charles Ogletree, a Harvard Law professor and director of the Charles Hamilton Houston Institute for Race and Justice, Pedro Noguera, professor at the Steinhardt School of Education at New York University, and Ron Walters, professor of political science at the University of Maryland. I thank you all for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.